Des, how you doing, brother?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad.
How's Marbella?
Yeah, it was fun, man. Real fun.
How was it?
Brutal, but it was fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. How many people were there?
It was a quieter one compared to Costa Rica. So I think there was 12, 13 clients.
Oh, nice.
So I think we had 30 or 40 in Costa Rica. So it was different. It was brilliant. It was just different.
What does it all consist of? Is there like a lot of like breathing? Is there like breathing stuff and whatnot involved as well? Or?
So he'll generally start the day with so we started most days with yoga, breath work, or some sort of like, because he calls it the warrior and the monk. So like he tried like there is elements of both. So we spent one day hiking up a mountain. We trained a couple of times every day. There was some educational bits to it as well. And then there was a lot of hard training.
Imagine. It sounds fun though.
No, you did, like it was it, and it was genuinely all shapes and sizes at it, which was cool. So it was people are very, which was challenging, but still really rewarding. It was people of very different abilities than we probably would have been used to with those. But it was brilliant. Yeah, it worked out really well. Paul, how you doing? Coach Andrew, Steve, howdy.
Your call tonight, Greg?
Tis.
Beauty. Always look forward to these, man.
Steve's about to bust out of his shirt.
That's if Greg gets boring.
That's why we bring him. It's extra medium, his t-shirt size.
So Ben keeps on sending you, man. He's like, you need to look good.
Yeah,
Body paint.
give everyone just another minute or so, and then we'll get started. So, guys, while we're waiting for other people to come in, has anybody got any wins that they want to share with us for this week? And it can be anything in particular, or coaches, if you want to call out a particular client that's on the call that's done something particularly special. It's always good to hear.
I'll take a chance right now. He's not on the call right now, but if he watches it in replay, Alex McClan, Alex, actually, David, you're very much the same. You're doing the exact same thing, which is awesome. And my client Gabe, which is like, these are three examples of guys who've just been really diligent with the process. And then because of that, they're actually seeing in, like a, I don't want to say rapid, but just a very steady and predictable decrease in body fat every single week. An increase of strength every single week, an increase in every single metric that they're trying to hit again every week, because they're leveraging their ability to recover so that they can actually use the metric of performance to kind of govern that, right? So, like, are you performing better? Are we knowing that? Are you quantifying it? And are you setting daily standards to hit? And it's been really, really, really cool to watch because, from obviously from my perspective, I get to be a little bit selfish and say it's great to see the process work, but we know it does, right? That's why we do this. But it's also really cool because I get to stand behind them and say, like, this is you, man. You're doing this. You're changing your body. You're changing your strength. And watching it all come together is really, really awesome.
That's cool. That's a good one. Does anybody else want to speak? It's got to be something, fellas. Andrew, you got anyone?
Man, I'm staring at Keith, Dez, and Paul right now. Pretty much across the board for Keith, he was traveling, and the past week or two, we were talking about cracking under 88 kilos, and he weighed in just under 88 kilos, so he's doing good. Paul and Dez, videos each week are looking better and better as far as execution with training, so things are good. And I think Morn is on here too. He might be meal prepping or something. He had a pretty gnarly sunburn like 2 weeks ago, but he's back to regular training.
He's there.
There he is.
Yeah, no, I'm busy with making food, yeah.
There we go.
We don't complain about that. If you're meal prep, and you can do that too.
Yeah.
I'll give a shout out to Sean in the group, man. We talk about this kind of stuff all the time. And sometimes clients don't recognize it themselves, right? But Sean very much called himself out. So I had a few days of a little bit of trouble, coming a little bit off plan, didn't need his hand held, called himself on his own shit, and got back on track real quick. Crawled back everything that he figured he'd lost in those 3 days, and just pushing forward with the program. It's cool to see that, like, because that stuff can snowball real fast. We see it in clients all the time. They go quiet, and we're messaging them, "What's up, man? Like, I'm here for you." Sean, straight on the blower to me, messaged me, was like, I fucked up in as many words yesterday, and we got back on track, and he was great. So much appreciation for your honesty, Sean. It's not always there. I wanted to touch on, before we get into what I was actually going to go through today, I wanted to touch on this group of men more so than anything else. I think anytime I go to any of the camps, I was in Marbella with a lot of the clients last week. I think one of the really cool things about this group, comparable to others, is first of all, it exemplifies what men should really be like. And Ben has this really weird skill. I don't know if any of the other coaches have seen it at some stage, those deep set Polish eyes, and they just see into your soul, right? He gets like, so he got all of us in a group on a Thursday. I think he beats everyone down a little bit with training for a few days to create a little bit more vulnerability in the group. And he just started asking like poignant personal questions to people. And the vulnerability in some of the men in the group was amazing. People telling not necessarily their deepest, darkest secrets, but just being open about how they felt. And he mentioned something in kind of just before that, where he talks about like how we should always feel our emotions as men, but we shouldn't allow our emotions to dictate what our actions are. So when you have a plan for a day, how you feel should not determine whether you complete that plan. And we can all stick to a meal plan, we can all stick to a training plan when everything is going well. It's the days that suck where you have to lean into that process even more. And I think that was really poignant when he said that, because it hit me more so than anything else. Because every time I go on these trips, and Steve will remember from Costa Rica, you start to, when you're surrounded by what men really should be. So, like, they talk about like men of character, men of their word, more so than what we perceive what real men are based off what we see in social media and what we see on television. So, I just wanted to give a huge shout out to this group. And coaches, if anybody wants to give feedback, like in terms of what you perceive of what a man should be like, because it's important. We have all these different aspects of what we perceive they should be like, but I think it's important that we understand what this group is made for and what we should strive to be. Does anybody have anything they want to add to that?
Craig, I'll go, man. You're hitting the nail on the head, though, right? Like, that's the whole point of why we're doing this. Because there's a lot of reasons why we can't, right? There's a million reasons why we can't, and that's the problem. Is that I think that some people get into that, and then they get stuck feeling like they have it harder. And if that's ever the answer, it's absolutely not, right? It's just absolutely not the truth. Everybody in the world, even if they do have the hardest life, it's all relative, right? We all have the life that we're handed, and it's our deck of cards, and it's our job, like you said, to show up, whether or not it's hard. Well, I would say it's our job more so to show up because it's hard. Michael Maris, he said something that will never not stick with me, and it was that some workouts you're there to break records, some workouts you're there and it's going to feel amazing, and some are ball busters and some are man makers, right? And the man makers and the ball busters are there so that you can celebrate the ones that you break records and feel great. But sometimes you go and that's what it is today. It's you feel like crap, the weight's moving slow, and you have a character, you're building your character in that session, right? And if you don't go through it, then what you're doing is you're, without knowing it, setting up this idealistic mentality in that you only do it when the moon's aligned, right? And then it gets, that's a slippery slope. I'm not sure if anybody has read The Comfort Crisis, but if you haven't, like, that's kind of along the lines of what I'm talking about. But anyways, without going into that, it's, yeah, I think you're hitting the nail on the head, man. We're here to do it, and we're here to be men of our word and to make sure that things get done, because that way we can be the inspiration of other people. There's a lot of people who really, really suffer. I remember my wife was talking to one of her clients. One of her clients had finally started, and she works with women, right? And one of her clients had finally started to get her thing going. And one of the things she said was really interesting. She actually said that she finally started working because she finally realized that you won't ever have time. You have to make time. And she actually had thought that the people who do it have time. And I'm like, that's wild. Like, no, you don't have time. You find time. Like, you have to carve it out. And it's like, that's the way it is. And if you don't want it, you won't do it. And so that's, I could probably rant for the next hour, so I'll stop right there. But you're right on, man.
No, that's really cool. And like, I can't remember who mentioned it while we were away, that we use so similar. We use time and we use stress as generally the excuses, right? And everything, no matter what, as we strive through life, there will always be more stressors. As when we were kids, when we were six, stressful was cleaning your room and making your bed. Remember your mother coming in and being like, "Make your fucking bed." And there would be fighting, there would be arguing. Now you're in a position where you have to run a house, you have to look after children, you have to be a husband, you have to be this, you have to be that. Like, we can handle the burden of stress, but we need to also use the good stresses as well, man. Like, this is ways to build resiliency. So yeah, I appreciate that, Steve. Okay. Now, on to, hold on. So today, just let me get my side of it up. It won't take too long, gentlemen. I wanted to take you through some of the stuff that we're starting to offer a little bit outside of like the standard coaching. And I'm going to show you guys, I'm going to show you guys some case studies of some of the more complex stuff that we've been through, right? And some of the more complex stuff that we can help you guys with if you see that as a problem for you. So let me share my screen. This happened last time, didn't it? It may not allow me to put this into full screen again. I'm not sure why. No. Okay. Doesn't matter. I did this to me last time as well. I'll just leave it like this. You guys can all see that okay? I'll see if I can make it a little bit bigger. So, what I wanted to take you guys through today, and I'll ask you guys some questions throughout this process. We look at you guys and we look at muscle intelligence clients as we try and treat you holistically as much as we can. So, don't get me wrong, you guys are here to get jacked, you guys are here to get lean. Like, that's the primary goal. But throughout that process, we want to be able to solve some of your more complex issues. We also want to be able to create a healthy organism, right? So a lot of the time you'll find people that come in with underlying issues, and it really, really stunts their ability to be able to achieve whatever their physical goal is. So I'll go through some of the testing that we offer right now, some of the more expansive stuff that we've started to implement as well. I'll go through a couple of case studies of some of the more complex stuff that has come through the door. And then we'll also look at any questions that you guys might have around about any of these testing. And it's important to remember, with me, I am not associated with any of these companies. I'll tell you the pros and cons of all this testing that we offer. I'm fairly open in that way. I'm not trying to upsell anything. If any of you guys come in with issues, I'm very careful about how much testing I do. I see over-testing and too much information as a problem for some people, right? So what we're going to look to do, We'll just go through briefly the tests that we actually perform, when and why you might need them, and then we'll touch on a little bit of the application. So, like in terms of the clients that have actually needed some like a deeper dive into their health, and how me, the client, and the coach helped solve those problems. One thing, guys. If you do not have, before you get into any functional testing, before you get into anything fancy, if you haven't been to your doctor to get a blood test, I know if any of you guys are here from Canada, God bless you, because it's almost impossible. I always try to help clients find a blood test there. It can be difficult in the UK as well, but comprehensive blood analysis, if you're in the States, we can organize this for you. It's no problem. But this gives us the basis for everyone's health. This is tried and tested over decades. It is very hard to dispute how accurate a lot of like standard blood tests that you get from your doctor are. And I always think, like, with people who come through my door and they come in, I've got no energy, I've got this problem, and they put in Dutch tests in front of me, they put in really fancy, expensive functional testing, and they're anemic, right? If you've got liver dysfunction, cardiovascular dysfunction, immune dysfunction, that stuff doesn't tend to come up in some of the fancier testing. So if you guys haven't gone and done comprehensive blood tests, probably you need to figure out at least once a year. If you've had problems on a previous blood test, you want to get tested every 3 to 6 months until those problems get solved. Okay? It's important that we know a baseline for your health. Before you start getting into any sort of like epigenetic testing and all this other stuff, we'll touch on that in a minute though as well. I know you hear this all the time, and I just wanted to put it to rest, right? We always hear Hippocrates said 2,500 years ago, all diseases start in the gut. That's not true. But there's associations to lots. Like a lot of the autoimmune diseases that you see now have association to some sort of leaky gut, intestinal permeability, whatever you might want to call it. You get all the diseases of Western civilization, type 2 diabetes, cancer, Alzheimer's, cardiovascular disease. They can have a really strong digestive component. And a lot of the time, you can solve gastrointestinal issues with just symptoms from people. But if you think there's something more malicious, I guess is the right word, underlying some of your problems, if you have digestive issues, stool analysis can be real beneficial. It can really help me or your coach to narrow in on what your problem is and try and address it specifically, rather than trying five different things to figure out, or as they say over here, throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks, right? So just be aware of that. But a stool test can give us, it can tell us a little bit more about the intricacies of your microbiome, right? And I always see digestive health as one of the limiting factors when people are failing in their body composition goals, because you'll find that people who have digestive problems, when they try and put on muscle and they eat more, they tend to put on a little bit too much body fat. When they're trying to lose body fat, they tend to have to go into quite aggressive diets in order to achieve that. Now, if any of you guys want more information on like digestive health, if you go back through the replays, I think I've done two at least on digestive health. So there's options for you there if you want to go and learn a little bit more about it before you come back and possibly ask about things. Not something I use all the time, but because it's one of the case studies, I thought I'd introduce it. There's something called an organic acid test. An organic acid test will tell us, as you can see from how it's written down, it'll give us cellular byproducts of basically what's going on inside your mitochondria. So the end, they always call it the powerhouse of the cell, right? So if there's something going on in terms of energy production dictates everything. Your ability to produce energy dictates your overall health. And if there's a problem there, this will show it. Now, it's relatively cheap, it's easy to do, but you don't always get the answers you want. But as part of a package in regards to like stool or possibly blood, it can be beneficial. Something slightly newer that we're offering now. you'll hear True Diagnostic, that name pop up quite a bit now. And that's what we call epigenetic testing. So we've been through the run of genetic testing, right, where we try and find some sort of snip in a DNA and try and treat it. It's applicable with certain genes. There's hundreds to thousands of genes out there that we don't know what to do with. So you get, I don't know if anyone's ever done direct to consumer genetic testing. You just get back this list, boom, these are all the SNPs you have. And then it might give you some basic information about how to address them. It's difficult. With epigenetic testing, epi just means on top of, right? So like epidermis, skin, epigenetics, you can consider it as genetics being what you're born with. Epigenetics is what your environment will dictate how you express those genes. So the food you eat, the air you breathe, the people you spend time with, the amount you sleep, all of those things. But what epigenetic testing in this one does, it'll actually give you your biological age. It's fairly accurate. So I'm 37 years old. I've actually never done epigenetic testing. This will tell me if I'm younger biologically than the years I've been on this earth or older, right? Now, it's extremely intelligent in how they figure this out. So it's a lot of computer learning. So the difficulty with epigenetic testing, it's great for a start point, right? And then you have to look at the symptoms you have, other tests that you might have in order to address your biological age. But this is so intelligent in terms of how they figure out these markers that some of the markers they spit back and we don't even know what to do with them yet. So the obviously the computer learning is picking out something that it sees in patterns that is a cause of aging, right? But then when you go through the literature to try and find out how to affect that, we don't know how yet. So epigenetic testing is cool, doesn't always give us dramatic amounts of action points, but what it can do for us is allow us to retest in 6 to 12 months' time and see if the protocol that we've implemented for you has worked. And we've been pretty successful so far in reversing people's biological age, which I think is pretty cool. Now, that's an idea in terms of, now we offer other things outside of that. Like we've done heavy metal testing for certain people if we think that's warranted. We've done Dutch tests for people to go deeper into testosterone breakdown for people who might be using TRT. So there's other things in testing that we use, but these are the primary ones that we offer you guys. But I say for you all, if you don't have a comprehensive blood test yet, get to your doctor, contact us, whichever you prefer, and get one done. Normally, when you catch these issues early, they're very easy to reverse with diet, nutrition, and lifestyle. You don't want to put yourself in a position at some stage down the line where you have to hand your health over to someone else through medication. Okay. Now we'll touch on just a couple of cases. So I'll give you three case studies of stuff that we've worked through with clients in order to help them, both with their health and their body composition goals, right? Because it stems back to most of those things. I don't want to, like, if someone comes to me and they feel fucking great and they're like, oh, one of my blood markers is off, I'd be like, okay. Like we can try and look at it if you really want to, if you love to see objective metrics improve, okay. But normally in those circumstances, I'd be like, you feel great, it's one marker, don't worry about it, unless it's something dramatic, right? But people who come in who don't feel good and they're doing most of the things right is where we try to use this. If people come in and they are eating poorly and they're not sleeping, they're not training, you deal with that stuff first. But let's go through some of them. Now, none of these are any of these guys' particular names, right? So I've taken the names out of it. In terms of the testing, you don't have to worry about what all these numbers mean. But Tony in particular was an interesting one. So he came in with digestive dysfunction, immune dysfunction. So he got sick all the time and he couldn't gain muscle effectively, right? So he was so adherent to his diet plan. But every time I pushed him over in terms of calories, 200 and 300 up, everything just accumulated in body fat real fast. And then in 5, 6 weeks' time, he's put on 0.5 pound to 1 pound of muscle, and we have to cut him again. So when we did testing with him, he had a bacterial overgrowth, quite a significant one. And he had this gnarling, burning feeling in his stomach that he always associated to like heartburn or reflux. But by the looks of it, in terms of him, he was just suffering with a bacterial overgrowth that so he wasn't pulling his nutrients out of his food. He wasn't processing protein well, and everything was just ended up in bloating and diarrhea and all these issues. And once he also had a little bit of a parasite as well, but this was multi-layered for him because if you look on this right-hand side, this is all what is supposed to be his good bacteria. He had none. Like he basically had none. It was one of the lowest that I've seen. So when you're trying to deal with him, yeah, you want to get rid of the bad bacteria that's there, but you got to try and deal with the lack of beneficial. So it was two-tiered. So I think a lot of the time when people come in with chronic long-term issues, they want it solved in 12 weeks. That's hard, man. Like people will come to me like, how long do you think it'll take? And I kind of go, like 3 months, maybe like a year. Probably more likely, right? So just understand that sometimes with these kind of slightly more complex issues, it can take time. And with Tony now, he's able to train like a savage and put on the muscle that he's supposed to put on. Now, he's still having some issues around immune function, and we're still working on that. So there is still more work to do. And this gentleman was a complex one. Still working with him, we're 6 months in and we've had loads of success. But this guy had diarrhea 6, 7 times a day, foul smelling stool, foul smelling farts. He was on proton pump inhibitors, like acid suppressors, for 20 years. They put him on acid suppressors when he was 18. I don't know if anyone's ever seen the long-term research around PPIs and overall health. It is shocking and it is criminal that doctors leave people on these for that amount of time. But I didn't ask him, I'm not a doctor. I didn't ask him to come off his PPIs, but he wanted to. So through the process with him, he had a bacterial overgrowth as well, man. Like he had literally a no immune system within his gut. It was bad. And this took a lot of time to get him off his PPIs, clear the bacteria, and we got him down to no reflux. We got him down to two bowel movements a day, and he felt great. Now, some of his symptoms have started creeping back. So, we're looking at more testing for him in order to figure out if there's still some lingering issues. But that was a big success for me and for him, solving his issues because there was a lot going on. When people come into me with long-term PPI use, I literally got it's almost like head palm because I'm like, this is going to be a grind because it's not a pleasant thing to come off. But he did really, really well, and we're still working on it. Last time I spoke to him, he hadn't had reflux in weeks. The stress seems to give it to him. When he eats spicy food, it tends to give it to him. So he just needs to stay away from those things, right? Last but not least, sometimes they're just slam dunks. It does not happen often. And when it does, it makes me look like a wizard, but really it's just this one thing that's wrong. It's very rare. But this guy was a really clear example of that. So like, ooh, I spelled history wrong. History of fatigue, poor sex drive, lack of motivation. It's a difficult one. A lot of men come in with this exact same issue and they'll instantly reach testosterone. I've got a testosterone problem. He didn't. He could not use carbohydrates effectively for energy in any way, shape, or form. I won't go through the details on it, but when you see like ratios like this in somebody in organic acid test, that's a real problem. And when we put him on a ketogenic diet, for the first 2 days, he told me he did not feel capable of driving a car because he felt drunk. That's how badly his metabolic flexibility was. And I've spoken about this in times prior. It's our ability to be able to shift from using carbs for fuel to using fats for fuel. It's so surprisingly important that we're able to do that. And it's rarer than you think in modern civilization. It's why people are driven by the amount of sugar that they consume. They're dictated by their appetite rather than actual hunger. After 4 and 5 days of him on a ketogenic diet, everything changed. So his was a really cool, easy one to show you guys. And before I finish up, It's easy for me to stand up here and show you all the success stories, right? That's easy. And there's ones like there's a gentleman in particular I'm dealing with right now who's got chronic fatigue based off chemical exposure, and it's super complex and it's hard to deal with. So like in 4 months, I've got him from a 3 out of 10 energy to a 6. He keeps falling back. I keep nudging him forward. It's multifaceted. His liver enzymes are through the roof. He's got a parasite. He's got all these problems. And we're dealing with this kind of stuff one by one. And it's difficult. So to say that this is all, I show you these, the success, it's great. Some of this stuff can get really complex and take a lot of time. But for people who don't feel well for a really long period of time, there's a way out. It just might take a little bit longer than you think. So that's predominantly what I wanted to take you guys through today. I wanted to see if you guys had anything that you wanted to discuss in terms of if you have any interest in testing. If you have any nutritional questions, I'm here. I'm open. Anything that you want to speak about, the floor is yours, guys.
A question just to kind of start it. With guys our age, Greg, in your opinion, what's the biggest nutritional bottleneck or thing people are lacking with their nutrition that prevents the repair of muscle damage?
So the only macronutrient that will affect muscle damage is protein. And it's one of those things where I know actually, I think it was Des that we spoke about not that long ago, where he asked about you've seen a lot of the longevity stuff now where they're implying that we should eat lower protein. And I thought about that a lot. The stuff sticks in my head for way too long. And I thought about that for a long time afterwards. And we know with clarity that muscle mass will determine how long we live. So I think protein is by far the biggest predictor of recovery. I think sleep is the biggest predictor of recovery, and it's often neglected by our community, by myself sometimes, and I'm sure by coaches at certain times as well, with all the bloody kids you guys have. So protein and sleep would be my answer. Nutrient wise, I would say like the most common stuff I see in guys now, I see vitamin D deficiency quite often. I'll see B vitamin deficiency quite often. And vitamin D deficiency isn't just sunlight, right? So people will think I got to get exposed to the sun. It's always a question of why. So you see people who live in or are exposed to the sun a lot and they still have low vitamin D. And that makes you think that there's something else going on. So is this an oxidative stress problem? So they're just burning through vitamin D real fast. Like I've seen clients who have had a really stable when they supplement, they come off for 2 months and it just plummets. So like that's something else that might be going on as well. People think it is easy, right? Like, okay, low vitamin D, take vitamin D, right? I do the exact same thing for people. We also got to figure out what's going on underneath.
So you mentioned protein. What would the essential prerequisites for that be? Like obviously the proper stomach acid, stuff like that. But like when you, what I've found is people who have maybe not been diligent with either good eating, maybe they have some problems in the gut, or even just introducing higher protein. Sometimes in very extreme cases, people have things like whey and they throw up. So like what are the underlying causes for this? Or maybe not even on that extreme, but other, kind of moving more towards what the general population is feeling. Are there any things to capitalize on that could help with the absorption of protein?
The easiest one for all of you to consider when you're sitting down to eat is what state you're in. So like we all eat on the go and it is terrible for digestion. Digestion starts with a side of food. When we digest food, we have to be in a relaxed state because that stimulates north to south digestion straight away. So like you'll start to release stomach acid, you'll start to release pancreatic enzymes, you'll start to release bile acid, you'll start to do all these things that will help in the digestion of protein. It's often something I forget to talk about with clients when I speak to them initially, right? Because I skip the simple stuff sometimes. But I've had success with people who just sit and chew their food. And like I know you spoke about like when you're changing diets, and I've said this a few times before, anytime you make dramatic changes to a macronutrient, you're going to have digestive problems for a few days because there's an adjustment period there. Like anyone I remember, was it Joe Rogan who wrote that amazing article about the first time he ever tried carnivore? And like he just spoke about the lava that came out of him for the first few days. And then you felt great, right? So like these transitions in dietary approaches can be difficult to begin with. So you can jump to supplements, right? You can use hydrochloric acid, you can use digestive enzymes to help break down protein. You can do all those stuff and that'll help. But if you're missing the steps, so like if you're not taking 10 deep breaths, if you're not taking time between bites, if you're not chewing your food, you're probably missing a trick.
You know, it's so eloquently simple, right? And I just think it's funny because you see that everywhere. I had this client that I was working with a couple days ago in person, and he was talking about how he didn't lose the weight he wanted this past month. I haven't actually been with him very long. He just restarted, but he's been on Ozempic, right? People think it's like this Hail Mary and miracle thing. And so he wasn't tracking his food. Right. And so when he first started, it had a massive effect. So he didn't eat. When he's a heavy guy, he was like probably north of 420 at least, right? And so he lost, I think, 70, but then he started not tracking his food once he started actually eating more because it started weaning its effect, the potency. And he's like, I didn't lose it. And I'm like, how do you know what you're eating? And he's like, and it's just, and people try to look for this grand answer, right? Kind of like you're saying, like, what can I supplement with? What can I do? They don't realize that they're like, blah, one bite for a burger in the mouth. And they're like, why do I have diarrhea?
Yeah, well, like Ozempic's a really good example of that. Winston, I'll come to you in 1 second, brother. Ozempic's a really good example of that. None of these drugs are weight loss drugs. It's an appetite regulating drug, so it works for weight loss. But there's only ever been one drug that is a true weight loss drug. Yeah, Steve, you might remember what it was called. It was around in the 70s, and it was like a mitochondrial uncoupler, and people would lose weight like hell. Then a lot of people started dying. So it kind of killed the buzz with it. But so there's no true weight loss drug. There's appetite suppressing drugs. So like you say with him, he lost weight initially because the appetite dropped, but then you can overcome that pretty quick. Winston, you got a question, brother? Hold on, you're on mute.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear, brother.
Perfect. All righty. So I'm having some concerns with my cholesterol. I'm 28 years old, healthy male. I work a very highly physically active job in addition to working out in the gym. I've been doing it for almost 10 years now. My cholesterol results average 232. They said they should be under 200. And I go to and visit a nutritionist every year. She's all natural supplements and whatnot. I also visit my doctor. The nutritionist said, "What I want you to start doing, you need the cholesterol, you need to survive. By the way, my body fat's well under 20%." She said, "I want you to take the highest cholesterol protein meal you eat every day and split it. Eat that protein or the carbs, whichever. One first, let that digest 30 minutes at least, then pick up the next one." So for the past year and a half, my breakfast consisted of 4 to 5 whole eggs cooked with a healthy sausage and or beef. I eat that, and as soon as it's down, I look at the clock. I count 30 minutes, then I eat my oatmeal. And she claims between the pancreas and the liver, the way things fluctuate, that excess cholesterol can flush out easier. Per my doctor and per a bodybuilder I ran into at a nutrition store, they're like, "Never heard of that. Like, that'll never work." That's what they say. So I don't know if you've ever heard of anything like that.
No, I've never heard that before. Now, there's lots of things I haven't heard of that can be true, right? So I'm not discrediting the idea. I just can't think of the mechanism why that would work at the
She
moment.
claims, so she had a diagram, this is years ago, I'd have to dig it out, that between the pancreas and the liver, these two things, in other words, if you had the cholesterol and the carbs at the same time, the excess cholesterol couldn't flush as easily. So I have noticed a slight decrease in my cholesterol by being on this, but there again, with all meals, it's really rough and tough to do it with every meal. My LDL went down. My triglycerides went up a little bit. They're now at 77. They were down around 42. My HDL, one of them went up. The HDL ratio went up. So I don't know if it sounds like a concern to you or not. I just probably keep doing what I'm doing since breakfast time is an easy meal for me to split like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily say to stop doing that, right? And then you can just it can be not quite an N equals one equation, but like you can figure out if it does work, right? If it's not too much of a hindrance in life. Now, people will ask the question, is cholesterol something that we really need to concern ourselves with? And I'm torn, right? So I think high cholesterol, I don't always think as the biggest concern, as long as there's not massive markers of inflammation elsewhere. So like if you had diabetes and high cholesterol, I'd be like, that's a problem, right? And that's something that we have to deal with. If you've got high CRP or any of these other markers that indicate inflammation, I'd be like, all right, we need to get your cholesterol down. Without damage to the cardiovascular system, cholesterol doesn't seem to be able to do that much damage. Yours isn't drastically high either. So like 230 is nothing crazy. No worries, Keith. But so now there is stuff that you can take to lower cholesterol. Fiber lowers cholesterol quite effectively. Garlic extract lowers it quite effectively. Plant sterols lower it quite effectively. So like there is options outside of that that you can use to try. It's important to remember for all of you guys, cholesterol consumption doesn't necessarily dictate how much cholesterol we'll have in our blood. Not for everybody, right? So for some people, for the majority of people, when we eat a load, our body will downregulate cholesterol production quite well. And it'll balance unless you massively overload people. But in the studies that they've done on that, you have these outliers that sit either end. So some people are hyper responders. So some people, when they eat really high cholesterol, their cholesterol will go up quite dramatically, but they're relatively rare. So when people say like, should I lower my cholesterol intake? I'm like, well, probably not. It's individualized, but.
Well, thank you. I also have a concern with that. I've also heard these arguments. Well, protein and carbs work hand in hand through the bloodstream, and hence you must have both of them at the same time. Would you foresee a loss of muscle growth by doing that type of a meal split?
No, I would. So there's some elements. So like amino acids will do use insulin as well, but they'll spike insulin themselves. No, not spike it. They'll increase insulin themselves. I wouldn't say splitting it will have any effect in terms of muscle growth, for sure. So I don't know if it'll work at lowering cholesterol, but I don't necessarily see it being a problem either.
A little bit of that runs in my family as well. The generation of people who were farmers and go, 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 on the go, always throwing heavy stuff around 12, 16 hours a day. So, but I'm going to keep my eyes on it, and I really appreciate your feedback on that. I do feel better about it.
No,
Of
no problem at
course, the
all.
doctor's trying to scare me.
No worries at all. Has anybody else got any questions?
When you brought up the comprehensive blood panel, Greg, is that equivalent to what I get when I just go in for my annual physical? I mean, I get the physical done and they run blood. I don't know what how comprehensive it is.
So it depends. So like, don't get me wrong. Some places, if it's with work, some places are quite comprehensive. Some not so much. Now, I would always start with that. So like, there's no point in going out and spending X amount of dollars on another blood test if you get most of the information that you need from an annual physical, right? So like, if you got your physical done, you send your bloods over to me, and everything just kind of looks like pretty spot on, I'd be like, look. There's no point in chasing numbers. So like, oh, let's get this other test done and see if there's something wrong. I don't like doing that with people. So like, if everything came back and it was like, dude, everything looks like really nice. Like Andrew sent me a few from a few of his clients the last couple of weeks, and I've been like, meh. Like there's very little wrong here. So like, I don't really want to pursue anything else. But if like you had a load of markers off, I might say, do you know what? I would rather see like a handful of other things just so I'm sure.
Great, thanks. Appreciate
No
it.
problem. No problem at all. How are we all looking?
Greg, I think Keith might have put a little extra in the chat, but he was,
Let me
if I
see.
can get this
Oh.
right, as far as parasites or maybe symptoms, I don't know if someone is, maybe on the fence of dealing with certain symptoms, bathroom trips, that type of stuff.
So he makes actually a really good question if you guys can see that. Knowing if you have them, if we should worry if we feel fine. That's a really good question, right? So you see that all the time. People come with stool tests and they're like, I've got like blasto is a real famous parasite that tends to pop up in a lot of people's stool tests. If they feel fine, I normally don't treat it, man. Like, so like a lot of the time you'll find people have all these different blends of bacteria within their gut. But if they're symptom free, I don't really want to chase after something. Now, don't get me wrong, if they came back with something really nasty, like cryptosporidium or something like that, I'd be like, okay, look, I don't care how you feel. We're going to deal with this. This is really inflammatory. You're probably just not feeling the issue right now. But if someone has good bowel movements and they're consistent, they don't get bloated all the time, I wouldn't be asking for a stool test to chase something that probably isn't there for sure.
Greg, I got a quick one for you. I don't know if you're familiar with any of this at all, like as far as the true diagnostics or epigenetics, where people will kind of say some individuals are capable of sleeping less based on genetics. Have you looked into any of that at all?
Oh, briefly, it's like 1 to 3% of the population can live off slightly less than 7 hours sleep. Effectively, that is, right? So people will often turn around and say, I do well on 6 hours. And you go, no, you're just used to it. So like if you get them to actually sleep for 8 hours for like 2, 3 weeks, they will feel better. It's a very small percentage of people based off a true diagnostic test that comes back and it says that they can sleep for, and it's not dramatic amounts. Like it's literally like an hour and a half less than what we would expect it to be. So yeah, it's definitely, it's probably no one on this call. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, thanks, brother.
No, no worries at all. We got 30 seconds. Anybody else want
Hey,
to add?
Greg.
Who's
How's it
there?
going? It's Antonio.
Ah, Antonio, how are you doing?
Very good, yourself?
Yeah, good, thank you.
I got one for you. I've been on a whey protein isolate for about approximately 5 months just to. And I know honestly that I'm obviously like every type of food you put into your body has like a biochemical reaction, but it's the only way I think I could get in my protein. Can I how long can I go how long can you take whey protein? Actually, right now it's a pure beef protein, so there's no milk product in at all.
No, normally I would just say I don't normally use much protein powder anymore. Not for any particular reason, I just don't. I would normally say to people to try and rotate protein source every 3 months if they can. There's an argument out there that you hear in the ether where people talk about, and it is true, if anybody can name one, they get 10 points, right? Name me in nature a protein source that's not backed by fat. There's one that's pretty close, but there's no animal out there that you can eat that's not backed by fat. So some people have that argument that we don't, it's not a natural thing to consume a massive amount of amino acids or protein without it being backed by fat. But I wouldn't necessarily can be concerned about it. So Antonio, I'd probably just look to like use whey protein, then use a beef protein, and you can rotate through those. And most people tolerate them.
Okay. You did mention the foul-smelling flatulence, so it kind of brought that up in my mind.
So Some people will, because we consume, now this is one of the arguments that you'll see in the longevity sphere, right? Because we eat a lot of protein in our large intestine, we've got a blend of different bacteria. Some of them feed off protein, some of them feed off fiber. If we have overabundance of the bacteria that feed off protein, that can be in certain populations quite pro-inflammatory. So when people have real stinky, eggy farts, like that's a sign of like what they call like hydrogen sulfide a little bit. So that could be a sign that you might be consuming too much protein at once.
Yeah, I've got a question, Greg. I was wondering on the protein source. So, does a protein source need to have all the 9 essential amino acids for it to activate muscle protein synthesis? Or, for example, like say if I was eating like chickpeas or something like that, can I activate muscle protein synthesis using chickpeas, or does it need to be a complete protein like with the 9 essential amino acids?
No, it doesn't. So leucine is really the only amino acid that will spike protein synthesis or mTOR. So leucine you'll get in higher abundance in meat for sure, but when if you're trying to use vegetarian sources in order to get the same target, it's the blends that are most important. I off the top of my head, I'm not 100% sure, but it's like combining like pulses and beans and different sources. So you have to be a little bit more selective when you're a vegetarian. So some people will argue the point that, say, I gave you a target of 160 grams a day. If you are going to try and pursue that on a vegetarian diet, to get what you want out of it, you might have to eat 180 grams, for example, to get the right blend. But to say you can't do it, like there's a lot of jacked vegetarians out there. It's just harder, because you've got to be a little bit more specific. Because especially when you eat on the go, like I can stop in the local Tesco, as you would know, and just get a packet of chicken. It's easy, to get it. But when you're eating a vegetarian diet, it does become harder.
Yeah, I'm not a vegetarian or anything. It was just for like each meal. I don't know how many times you want to activate muscle protein synthesis in each meal. So I was just wanting to make sure that every meal I was getting in was kind of triggering that essentially.
You'll only hit it. You'll only trigger it once per meal, generally. Anyway, so as long as I think it's 5 grams of leucine generally you need to spike it. That normally does the job.
Thanks for that.
No problem at all. Anybody else, boys? Oh, Mohammed, didn't see you there. All right, fellas. If there's no more questions, I'm going to bed. I love you all dearly.
Awesome.
Get some rest, coach. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. I'll speak to you all soon.